Sure. I think it's recording.
Yeah, I see the blue dot.
I need to get a Wi-Fi booster or something. Are you good with tech?
With tech, a little bit, but not incredibly if we're talking like everything.
Are you familiar with Wi-Fi boosters at all?
You know what? I haven't really used Wi-Fi boosters, just like the basic sort of modem, so.
Oh, okay. So I need one for my upstairs. The downstairs is not too bad, but I notice when I go upstairs, the signal kind of wanes a bit.
Oh, okay. I think our basic one is fairly powerful, so that's why it can, like, head upstairs no problem, so it just depends.
Oh, that's cool, man. So did you have anything you wanted to talk about at all?
Yeah, in terms of a topic, I didn't really have too much. I've been kind of more frequently practicing in seclusion again, so that's been nice. Kind of sometimes fall out of that a little bit, but whenever you know I come back to that, it's nice to appreciate that and just kind of I find like the basics, you know, the fundamentals of just talking yourself into, you know, feeling safe, secure, and satisfied, like that's really it. Because it can get like, you know, we can get carried away with things sometimes, so just kind of coming back to that basic sort of thing, it's like, okay, that's all you need.
Yeah, that reminds me of this UFC fighter, Boss Rutten. Are you familiar with him at all?
Oh, no, I haven't heard of him.
I love MMA, and particularly this guy, Boss Rutten. He's like, he's an old school dude from the past, but he was considered one of the best. I don't know if he was heavyweight. He was up there in weight. He wasn't a lightweight or featherweight. But anyway, he was a great fighter, and he always stressed kind of what you were just talking about. He always stressed the basics, because he was like, a lot of fighters when they get into this or when he's training them, they want to learn spinning elbows and flying knees and Superman punches and all this crazy jiu-jitsu stuff, which is fine. But he would always say, you know, you can't, the old jab, cross, front kick, and knee, you can't go wrong with that stuff, you know? And he's like, learn to master that, because that's what everybody just glazes over. But he's like, but I noticed, he said, a lot of people don't have that solid foundation of the basics. And, they suffer because of it, you know, and he was a champion, so he knows what he's talking about, you know. But that, yeah, that reminds me just of what you said. It's like, it's easy to get carried away, not only in the over-intellectualization of it, but especially with the sankharas and habits of, like, collectively the habits of society that tell us, like, You have to get the big trophy. You have to study your ass off before you get the big prize. So it can be easy for, especially Westerners, as we know, like you just we do what we always been trained to do, which is just to sit there, learn all the vocabulary, study to be a good student. But our educational system doesn't really teach a kind of free-spirited, like, artistry. Like Damarada would sometimes refer to, like, the Dhamma as, like, an art, you know? An art. And I like that. There's so much freedom into it. And it's also simple. It's like, here's the paint, here's this, and that's how you do it. You paint on the canvas. And you could sit there all day before you make a single brush stroke and say, but is the canvas sitting right? Is the light right? Do I have the right mixture of color? And it's like, no, art isn't about that. It's a little about that, but it's more about start to paint, start to write your poetry, start to do what the basics are within the practice. And then you get the fruits of all these things. And ironically, it's when we pull, it's when we not pull back, but when we empty, when we completely let go of trying to get somewhere other than where we are right now. When we start to be here and now, when we start to be satisfied here and now by remembering to change any unwholesome thoughts to wholesome, then we can be satisfied here and now. And then we can develop this calm mind. And then when the baby dukkhas return, we rinse and repeat. And that's the practice. And it's simple, but at the same time, it is profound. It is miraculous. It is awesome. Because anybody who's suffered, like all of us have suffered in life, knows how great it is to get a moment's rest. Let alone if you can develop a practice that enables you to get that moment's rest moment by moment by moment. Like, what else could we possibly pursue in life that would be worth pursuing? There is nothing. Unless you're ignorant, chasing sense pleasures or something. And it's not even that necessarily there's nothing wrong with sense pleasures. It's just the emphasis, especially in society, is just too much on sense pleasures. Everybody I know these days is hopped up on alcohol or dope or entertainment of all types or addicted to complaining. You know, this is a very, our culture is very living in excess. It's very out of balance in that regard, you know?
Yeah. And if you're caught up in sense pleasures, it's very easy to complain about things because reality isn't the way that, you know, one wants it to be right now. So that's like the danger in it, right? So it's not reliable. Yeah.
Yeah, I like telling myself everything's fine, everything's perfect. The world's perfect, just the way it is, with all its blemishes and scars. It's just the way it's supposed to be. And it is so much to developing that attitude of like, it's the confidence of when things go down, when things really hit the fan. When you understand that taking a step back and not getting involved is something you can do, it's a really subtle thing that you can identify and be joyful about. Because even though I've been practicing for years, still to this day, I'm surprised when things are going out of control. And I don't do this all the time, but once in a while, my practice kicks in correctly. And then I take a step back and like, oh, if I don't get involved, if I laugh at this situation, if I don't take it too seriously, if I can remember that by doing this, I will gain all those beautiful fruits of this wonderful garden, of this wonderful practice, then it's like, oh, that's the whole practice. So if anybody's listening, if you're ever suffering a lot or you find yourself in the future suffering sometime, it really is like Buddhadasa Bhikkhu said when you get sick, and Dhammarado says, it's like it's the best time to practice when shit is hitting the fan, because that's when that's when you really see that wow factor. Wow, the world can fall apart and I'm still okay. I'm still here and I don't have to get involved, you know? Nobody's putting a gun to my head and saying, take the situation seriously, you know? And thank God for that.
Yeah, normally I think it's, I mean, we're the ones who are doing that to ourselves when we're not paying attention, right?
Yes.
Got that imaginary gun to our heads, and it's like, okay, calm down. Or recognize that, you know, it's that's the thing, right? So, but yeah,
we are used to putting the gun to our head to get involved, go do something, go get involved. Yeah, and it's like, it's almost like when children grow up in abusive households, it's like they grow up and become abusers. It's just the world they grew up in. They know no better, you know. It's familiar territory for them. And just like us, it's like we've always When dukkha arises, we've always learned to chase it. We've always learned to chase sense pleasures. And to real no benefit whatsoever. None that I'm aware of. It might feel good for a minute or two, even a couple days. Ultimately, it just leads to more suffering, more dukkha. So practice the Four Noble Truths of the Eightfold Path. Yeah. Solitude is really nice too. When I go for long walks in nature, I really enjoy it. And I really enjoy just having the choice to do nothing. Ajahn Suchart said, we've all been in situations where we've been on vacation or we get jet lagged and stuff or whatever. And then we come back home and all we want to do is nothing, you know? And Ajahn Suchart was like, you can do that all the time. You can just lay down peacefully. You can sit down peacefully and be completely joyful, just relaxing, just hanging out, not causing any dukkha for anybody else, not causing any dukkha for yourself. And society may not be used to a lot of that type of, they may mistakenly call it laziness. It's not laziness. I know lots of people practicing the Dhamma that are very hard workers and might not even have typical jobs or any jobs at all, or might not have goals in the classical sense, but are still accomplishing goals every day. You know, some may be more subtle and hard to see. Some may be more obvious, but it's not laziness. It's not, what is that? Is it topor or something?
Sloth and torpor, yeah.
I always say Tokar and Rezar from the Ninja Turtles. Sloth and topor, Tokar and Rezar.
Yeah. Torpor. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a bit more perhaps of a wordy way of putting that particular hindrance, but yeah. I like to, when thinking about that, though, it's more, I think, in relation to also, for one, there's, like, dullness that might come up, but it's more in terms of hindering the practice, you know, or being like, well, I am too tired, I can't gladden the mind, so I'm just going to mire in hindrance, right? Like, so it's kind of like it'll support the others in that regard, so. And funny enough, you know, so it leads to restlessness, right? So it's almost not being able to put in the effort to relax, funny enough, like just, which is kind of a non-effort in a sense, but man.
Yeah, you don't want to put too much emphasis on it where dukkha would begin to arise, dissatisfaction would begin to arise. There's been a lots of times recently in my practice where I could almost go two roads. I could tell myself I'm dissatisfied or satisfied, and then I get there and I go, I'm feeling okay, and that's perfect. But in my head, I know, like, I'm feeling anxious, fear, anger, but I'm telling myself, no, it's in the past, I would have caused dukkha because of those fetters. But now I'm just accepting those fetters and becoming friends with them. And it's like, no, it's as long as I'm not acting out on it, that's the best part. You know, I get to enjoy being, knowing that I can cultivate wholesome thoughts out of these things that may arise, that may not feel amazing as soon as they arise. But then we do our little dance, we start changing them. And it's like, no, you're just a human. There's just chemicals in your brain. You don't have to take it too seriously. And then, passes rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, no, it's natural to get tired, sometimes. Like, I think there's that aspect to it. Where it's like, yeah, no, that's going to come up. But the main thing is like, okay, kind of just becoming aware of it and then being like, okay, is there aversion towards that, right? Or is there that sort of thing. So it's like being able to play with that, I think. And sometimes I think, it's one of those things where if the mind's a little dull, we might be able to do a thing or two just to brighten up a little bit, Either becoming aware of the breath and maybe breathing a little bit fuller, or sometimes I notice even like breathing a little fa like that's where sometimes the fast breaths I find coming in just to energize the body, but making a change there can sometimes help a bit if there's a dullness. But in terms of being tired, it's like, hey, sometimes we do just get tired, and the best thing to do is to just, rest. So, and actually, funny enough, in one sense, it's beneficial if we can rest, right? Because that's the opposite of restlessness. Like, restlessness is also a hindrance, right? So it's not saying don't rest, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like the Zen saying, like when hungry eat, when tired sleep, and there's no problems. There's no problems with that. Just being as things are, just existing in the way things are, joyfully. It's a real honor and pleasure to be able to like even hear of the Dhamma. I don't think I would have ever come to just the simplicity of it if I didn't meet Dhammarado. I think I would have gotten close, but I think I still would have been over intellectualizing things, philosophizing things too much, instead of just like learning to be satisfied here and now. Like Dhammarada always says, can you be satisfied here and now? And then he'll like call all of our names, like, DJ, can you be satisfied here and now? And that's the practice, here and now, not in the future, not in the past. Can we be satisfied? It's like, yeah, I could be satisfied. It's not too difficult.
It's kind of funny though, because that's where like the confidence develops too, because it's like, well, if we can be satisfied right here and now, we can also be satisfied in the future, funny enough, but we don't need to worry about that. And that's the beauty of it, because it's much more manageable. I mean, this is like one of the, I think, really beneficial things to see, is that especially when we're talking about like things hindering the mind from being satisfied right here and now, right? Is it's like one at a time that they're kind of coming up, right? So it's not like we have to go and deal with all these years and years and years of craving, right? It's like, no, we're dealing with the craving that has arisen right now. Right, and we can see it, and then we can recognize it, and we can drop it, right? And so whatever's hindering the mind now, we can drop it, and that's how we can deal with things, rather than having it be this massive pile on, right? This large story or this conceptual idea of what that thing is. It's like, no, this is the direct practical thing of realizing the end of dissatisfaction now, and then doing that again now,
Yeah. And going deeper into anatta, you realize like once the practice gains a little momentum, once we're it's becoming much easier to satisfy the mind now. I like dwelling upon or investigating in the moment anatta, and it's like every moment is a confirmation that like, oh yeah, there's not really a self. Like there is to some degree, but really it's like there's such comfort for me in knowing that I don't have to think about a very important self with a very important past and a very important story. And Dhammarado was mentioning the self the other day, and he said something really interesting. I don't know if I'll be able to remember, but oh, he was talking about it's really a lot about like the impermanence. It's not that there is no self, but it's like rather that the impermanence of the self makes it not so like important. So yeah, there's a type of self, but it's not going to be permanent. It's not going to have the soul that carries on. And yeah, that's awesome too, because it's like a yin yang thing. It's like we exist, yet we don't. Like we exist now, yet we want the future. But it all kind of cancels each other out. Like emptiness is form, form is emptiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to dwell on anatta because it's just like it's almost like a magical phrase that kind of just helps me to take away any dukkha that arises. Like, there's not really anybody here that you need to take so seriously when these things arise, when anger arises. You shouldn't be getting so angry because none of this we're going to take with us. None of this is going to last forever. Everything changes constantly. Stop holding on. Stop being so hard on yourself, too. You know, take it easy. Relax. Everything's perfect. Yeah. I heard a quote the other day that was saying, like, I don't know if it was from Rumi or somebody, but it said, like, silence is the only friend that will never betray you, or something like that. And I was like, wow. Because ever since I was a kid, even in tough situations, like I always loved being in isolation. And I noticed early on other children hated it, but I loved it because one of my stepfathers was not the nicest person. So when I did get sent to my room, I had all my Batman toys and all my candies hidden away, and it was just the greatest thing in the world. To not be around anybody was a blessing. And I still feel it to this day. And in a way, I'm so thankful for my stepfather for that because he really, if it wasn't for that, I would probably be just lost in the mire of dukkha like everybody else, you know, trudging through it, trying to figure it out still. But he really kind of gave me an edge over other people to already be satisfied by being by myself to some degree, really helped drive certain points home within learning about the Dhamma and practicing the Dhamma. So it's cool how, like, even a stepfather who might not always make the most correct decisions is such a blessing that he didn't do everything perfectly. It's such a blessing for even it could be for handling things a little bit too heavy-handedly can be a real blessing when you're older if you just change the way you're looking at it, you know, because it could be so easy for me to fuck him. I'm a victim. I'm the pity party. You know, everything sucks. Why does this always happen to me? But really, just a little change of perspective, a little gently walking around the baby dukkhas. And it's like, no, actually, he was a very good man. He had a lot of good qualities. It wasn't all bad. And even the bad stuff taught wonderful things. And still
Yeah.
serve me to this day. So that's really nice.
Yeah, that's interesting bringing that up because it kind of points to also the anicca, the impermanence of like how we don't have to hold on to a specific perception, like the perception can change, or even when it comes to like anatta, right? Or I mean, with non-self, right? And so when we look at somebody, we can have a very fixed view of who they are, and we kind of form a large story on this person, but it's actually quite dynamic if we're looking at, you know, a person. And there can be many different facets, and they can change, and they can also change just depending upon our perspective of them and how we're kind of looking at things.
Yeah, I noticed with some friends that I talk to or family members or whatever, they all say, oh, this, I don't like that. And I could see immediately they're almost setting themselves up for failure because they're programming themselves. You don't have to either like nor dislike something in this world. Why choose to tell yourself that you don't like it? Let it be. And it will not hinder you. But when the moment you open your mouth, and even if you say it silently to yourself, like, I don't like him. Well, is he bad all the time? You're telling me he's not good ever? You're telling me there's not something good that could come out of them in any moment or any situation? Like nobody's all bad. Nobody's all good. Nobody, even when they say they dislike something, dislikes it all the way or
Yeah.
dislikes it all the way. And it takes, that's just the ignorance.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever we talk about ignorance, I always think of that South Park Michael Jackson, when he's like, "It's ignorance, it's ignorance."
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? It always makes me smile when I hear, because we in the Dhamma we talk about it so
We talk
much.
about ignorance a lot, yeah.
So I like to say in the voice of my head, like, "It's ignorance."
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing too, I think, when it comes to, having understanding and compassion that's born from the wisdom that really everything is coming from ignorance in terms of, when people kind of do something that's, not so skillful, in the world. I'll say that lightly, in that way. But, it does ultimately stem from a place of ignorance, because if they truly knew better, they wouldn't do it, because it's much more relieving to not do that. You know what I mean? So like that's sort of the aspect of it. So like when, somebody commits something that's rather horrendous, and it's interesting because folks will be like, well, no, there's some reason that there, but like ultimately speaking, like if we're kind of coming from this practice, it all comes from ignorance, because one is much more satisfied, easy, at peace when they're not going around and acting unskillfully. If you don't want anything, if you're truly fulfilled, you're not going to go around harming people, right? And so that's sort of like an interesting thing, is that like ultimately, yeah, it does come from ignorance, and there's like different degrees to which it can come up in our lives too. And we can kind of notice, like you said, like the baby dukkhas, like even when there starts to be a formed self there, of like, I like this thing, I don't like this thing. So there's a bit of a personality view that kind of forms due to like tastes, right? And it's interesting because that, yeah, there's so much that can go with, like, in terms of like a ego or a formed sense of self more and more. If I'm a person of fine taste, so I need to have, and then that's where it's really like getting swept away by the sense pleasure. So we have this form, we form this self that's based on these sense pleasures, and that, oh, there can even be some conceit in there. I'm better than this person because I like the way that, only this kind of bread tastes, right? This artisanal bread. So I'm better than these other people because I like these artisanal bread. And so it can form this whole thing. But then you're on, you've been marooned on an island, and all you have is some basic, white bread, and that's all you have to eat, right? And so you're bummed out because you
Delicious.
can't have the special bread, right? So it's like it leads to all these different conditions for happiness, right? But it's interesting to see that, because we can see that with such clarity sometimes, and how it like really starts to form really quickly in the thoughts. And then we notice how even that process of self-forming is also not self, which is kind of like, it's kind of funny if we catch ourselves in that whole thing of like, you shouldn't be having these thoughts of forming a self, and we can say, oh, well, it's on those thoughts are not particularly helpful, but even those thoughts are non-self. That process itself is anatta. So what.
Yeah, it's just taking it's taking the illusion seriously, and it's not that there is nothing. It's like the wind. It's like getting scared of a ghost if the wind is blowing the curtains. It's like, yeah, the curtains are moving by an unseen force, but if we examine the force, we have the wisdom to see, like, oh, it's just the wind. And it's like, yeah, the thoughts do produce chemicals that seem quite real in the moment, but a little examination and just observing the moment, we can think, oh no, I could change this. This is just what happens to all humans, because we're sensitive creatures that work with these chemicals biologically in the brain that make us feel all different types of ways all the time. And they're never the only consistency is that they're never consistent. They're always up, always up. Nobody's happy all the time. Nobody's sad all the time. Even if they say there are moments of freedom, there's more moments of peace. But yeah, we start building those castles made of sand when we say, I like this, I don't like that. And it's like, why do we cling to a self? Because we're looking for a life raft in this world. And what society teaches us is, because it is, you wake, in a sense, you wake up in this flesh body that experiences all these things, pain, suffering, anguish, and you want to be safe from it. You think, in a way, it's almost the only thing that exists is if you're not careful, you're going to fall in this ocean of just hell. So we make a life raft the best we can, and the best society can. They've known how is just to grab at shit and just put it together, and like, no, I'll be safe if I have a gun. No, I'll be safer if I'm the governor. No, I'll be safer if I'm the king. I'll be safer because if I'm better than him, that means I'll be safer because he's less than me, she's less than me, so she'll go first, and I'll be safer. So we're playing these games, these dangerous games with ourselves of liking, disliking, being and becoming. When really, if we just said, dude, just chill the fuck out. Nobody's better, nobody's worse than anybody. Death is not even a big deal. We go to sleep every night, we don't cry about it. We lose everything at night. And it's okay, maybe it'll come back. And people say, is there reincarnation? Isn't there? I don't know, I don't care. But if there was, chances are you're going to be born into a better world if you're not worrying about shit right here, right now, if you're satisfying. So it doesn't matter. But if that is something that is a part of your life and culture or tradition, then that the Dhamma as Dhammara is presented by Dhammarada works with everything to some degree or another. You could be a Tibetan Buddhist who believes in fantastical things. You could be the Theravada Zen. You could just be just a person, and it will work for you when we're understanding the basic level of it's beyond the metaphysical, because it doesn't matter if we're not satisfied right here, right now. It's not like, well, technically, I have evidence that there's life after. It's like, that's okay. We're not talking about that. The Buddha wasn't concerned with that. The Buddha was concerned with dukkha, dukkha-nirodha, getting rid of suffering here and now, dissatisfaction here and now, and gladdening the mind here and now. And it's even though that's we're always repeating that, anybody who's really earnestly been doing this practice knows that it's worth repeating over and over, rinsing and repeating over and over, because it's been many years that society has done the rinsing of repeating of the negative commas, of the bad commas and habits. So we're catching up with our practice by repeating this. Because even I don't always remember, I'm a lot better than I was yesterday. I'm a lot better than I was the day before, and month and years, and but that's the thing. It's because I'm always repeating. It's because of sanghas. It's because of when I'm reading a book, instead of maybe reading some dumb shit, I'm reading stuff that other practitioners in the Dhamma are writing. And that also helps me to remember to look, to remember to change and satisfy myself here and now. Because it's so subtle, it's so profound.
And that's it. It's subtle and it's profound, but it's interesting how, like, with that simple thing of remember, look, change, that's coming back to those fundamentals of applying, the right noble sati, the right noble viewing, and the right noble effort. And just to keep doing that again and again and again. And it's interesting too. You're bringing up, when we kind of see the benefit in that. But ironically enough, if we don't see the benefit in it, if somebody's kind of, I think, been practicing for a while, but for whatever reason, complacency takes over, one will slip into dissatisfaction or even suffering to the point where they're going to be like, oh, wait a minute, and start pra start it started up again. Because that's sort of like that bell, which is just gonna like wake you up, after a period of time where it's just like, okay, we don't have to do this. I think like once one has seen, that there is freedom from this, that's sort of the cool aspect that, wait a minute, there is a way out of the dukkha and the dissatisfaction is available right here and now. But that's something where I've noticed, in here in my own practice is like definitely it's so helpful to like when there's a piled up story or if I've fallen out of it for a little period of time, right? It's to not build that up too much, but to just wake up and be like, okay, I can come back right now. To throw down those barriers and those expectations. And I think that's something where like, yeah, over time, we see this again and again. Like I see it again and again, where it's like, oh, okay, don't need to have any expectations. It really is starting from just being okay. Like you don't need to be, ecstatically happy, all the time or what have you. And actually, funny enough, like not that that is cool too. Like it's being able to ride, the waves of being like happy and joyful, right? Like wowie, but also being able to just be okay, just be at peace, just be fine. Or even when hindrances are coming up, to be able to see those and relate to them in a skillful way. But always, yeah, just dropping the expectation is helpful.
Yeah, it's like I'm sure the Buddha talked about this. I know many masters have talked about this. But it's like the typical normal point of view would be like, it's storming outside. This sucks. It's dark and cloudy. But naturally, everything is impermanent. The sun comes out. Oh, there is happiness there. But their ignorance is that they don't realize the sun is always there shining behind the clouds. They're always like, oh, it's cloudy. Will the sun ever return? Will it not? I don't know. It's ignorance of within their temporary sense pleasures, there is the same joy, but it's the ignorant joy that thinks that this is the way things are, and it's not. It's a delusion. The real truth of the matter is the real happiness is buried behind there, even when there's anger that arises, even when there is boredom that arises, even when there's joy. Because you see that the chemicals are just the clouds. The sun didn't go anywhere. The one who knows is always there, peacefully observing, peacefully existing. And that's what I like, what Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, I believe, would talk when he would say about anatta. It's not that there's or voidness and stuff. It's not that there's nothing. It's kind of the amazing part is that there is something, and yet there's nothing at the same time, in a way. Emptiness is form, form is emptiness, in a way. And I'm like, yeah, I get. It's not even that it's something to get. It's just such a, it's almost like poetry when I hear it. It's like you don't have to get it. You don't have to not get it. There doesn't have to be Buddhism. There doesn't even have to be the word Dhamma nor not Dhamma. It's like when we're satisfied, all these concepts wash away. All of them. Zen, Theravada, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, whatever. Everything washes away. Self, non-self washes away. Everything. And what's better than that? Nothing's better than that. Unless to rinse and repeat and keep it. In a way, we should be thankful for the baby dukkhas that we get to. It's almost like the Christians say, like, we should be thankful. I don't know. Well, maybe a Christian's never heard said this, but we should be thankful for the devil because thereby we can still turn away from him and worship God. It's like he kind of, we almost liked getting sucked into the devil because it's like, no, we're going to turn our back on you and go back to God and have that same feeling of rinsing and repeating and going back. So in a way, the baby dukkhas, it's like you can never be upset about dukkha because it's always reminding you, hey, there's this awesome thing called the Dhamma and enlightenment, and you're always in it. You're always experiencing it here and now. The one who knows is always here. And it's like, so what can hurt us? What thing can cause dissatisfaction? Nothing.
And that's too like talking about that, satisfaction or that peace or Not even because that's the really cool aspect of it being the subtractive processes. It's not any due to any particular thing, right? Is that, yeah, it is reliable. It's there because it's not a thing, right? Like it's like, so it is available when we look, when we abandon the, when we, and that's the thing is because by the time we've actually woken up, we can see those hindrances and then it's like, okay. And there's enough wisdom that we can abandon them. It's like, okay, yeah, it's there. The only thing is, again, it's like the sky, yeah, but it's like there might be some clouds in the sky or what have you that are kind of obstructing, or even we could say like the sunlight, right? And it's like, yeah, the sun is always shining, but the hindrances are going to be obscuring it, like, these clouds. So we can just see those hindrances and easy enough, we can, break them up once we understand them. We can just, yeah, no biggie. But the issue is that like with momentary like sense pleasures is essentially what we're doing is we're giving away that peace, that joy, that happiness to these particular objects. And sometimes, funny enough, those objects can even become the idea of peace, joy, and happiness, right? We have this idea, this concept of I want to have peace, joy, and happiness. And then we even give away that very thing to those concepts. So I want to have last Tuesdays. I bring up last Tuesday for some reason, but whatever it is, right? We have that thing. And I think that's like one kind of after any sort of experience that we have, practicing in seclusion, it's cool to appreciate that, but recognize, okay, cool. Can we see whatever is now? Like not to reify or form things too much, but actually just to be able to see that absence, because then it's really easy to access that, because that piece, because we're not like we're not pinpointing it down to be this particular thing. So that's kind of,
Yeah.
yeah.
It's the one thing in life where we can put down the measuring tools. We can put down the rules, regulations. We could put down the striving and scratching and scraping to enjoy the breath. It's as simple as it gets to enjoy the breath here and now and be satisfied here and now. But what about this? But what about that? But the polycanon says this. But my friend said this last Tuesday, This after this is like all that other stuff doesn't matter if we're breathing and being satisfied here and now. It's like Dhammarada said, "Are you satisfied?" And he calls us by name. Like I said, "Are you satisfied?" It's like, yeah, pretty awesome.
No, that's the cool thing too with satisfaction, and this is something that Dhammarada brought up that I found quite beneficial, which is just to dabble, do you? You don't need, and when you were talking about dropping like the measuring tools, this is precisely it. It's with satisfaction, right? It's not about having, oh, immense satisfaction. No, because it's just satisfaction. It's like you're satisfied, you're satisfied or you're not. It's not like, so just a dab of satisfaction is enough. And there you go. That's complete satisfaction right there. But I need to have more satisfaction, which,
Want to be more in love, more satisfaction, more of this.
What's ironic is, or funny, is if we say like more, what we could be referring to is the repetition of it. Like, okay, we return home to this now and now. And now, right? So there's a repetition going on. But it's not like during those repetitions, there's a greater scale. I would say that if we're talking about maybe a scale, but ironically enough, the scale gets so inflated that it breaks, that would be more joy, right? So we can feel that, ex joy that goes to just like, oh, it goes beyond words. And at w which point it also kind of breaks, funny enough. But we can also be chill without that immense joy. Like again, as the mind kind of goes into more refinement, we can enjoy that too as the joy dies down and we're just left with satisfaction. And then we kind of go to pleasure beyond pleasure in a sense, where it's like we don't care if it's pleasure or it's going beyond even that. Where so then it's just chill. Like that's really it.
Yeah, I even if this may sound unskillful and I wouldn't recommend it, but for myself, I understand the inner workings of it. So sometimes when there's dukkha, I'll just be like let's say I'm angry. I'll tell myself, like, in the past, I would have been like, no, you're supposed to be enlightened. You're not supposed to get angry. But now I'll tell myself, like, oh, you're angry? Like, big fucking deal. What do you want to be happy forever? You want to be enlightened? You're this most spiritually perfect person? Who gives a fuck? You're a human. You're going to get angry once in a while. Doesn't fucking matter. And that's what I tell myself. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like that just moment of not needing to change. You know, it's like I'm not acting out. I'm not doing anything wrong. So it's like, yeah, feel angry. Who gives a fuck? Like you need to feel happy all the time. You need to feel, but that in itself is the real joy, is the happiness that I don't need to feel a particular way all the time on a very different scale of levels. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing because I think too with anger especially, and I noticed that with myself, and I think when one kind of practice these things, and again it can be quick because the mind works quick, but you know to get into that thing of like, oh, you shouldn't feel this way because you're oh so enlightened or what have you,
Shouldn't make mistakes, you know.
and so. It's so when it comes to anger, there can be, aversion there. Ironically enough, there's so the hindrance is ill will, right? So we'll have ill will towards the emotion of anger that comes up. And so it's like you're not going to end it. It's funny enough, in the Dhammapada, right? It says, hatred will not end by hatred. You're not going to, get over that by hat throwing more ill will in the mix. It's actually through dissipating it, through seeing it, and just being like, oh, okay, you know what? This isn't okay, cool. You know what? We don't have to go into it. We don't have to feed it more, but we can also be abandon it, abandon that ill will. And then eventually, whatever, because at that point, sometimes maybe the anger has built up, but it's one of those things where it will kind of work itself out. But if we're like adding more ill will towards it, it's not going to do that. So it's like to be able to see the ill will, yeah, that we could have, or the yeah, towards ourselves, right? Like you're bad for feeling this way.
And so like almost 99% of it is the actions. If you're angry, if you're hateful, if you're spiteful, if you're this or you're that, or anger, hatred, and delusion, if you're being peaceful with your physical body and you're not causing dukkha to others, to me, that's a good wholesome thought is to tell yourself, like, hey, you may be angry, you may have anger, hatred, delusion. But 99.9% of the battle is already won just by you sitting peacefully and not acting on those crazy things. And then that calms you down immediately. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm not. It's, so what? You know, if I'm angry or hatred, I know that that's not me. There's no me attached to any of this. And then it goes down more. And then the more wholesome thoughts of everything's fine right here, right now. And before you know it, those things are gone. And it's like, everybody's like, no, I can't. I practice. I'm a Buddhist practitioner, and when I meditate, I can't think. When I live my life, I can't get angry. I can't make mistakes. I can't. I, me, my, I. It's like, no, that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here is learning to be satisfied here and now. Those things may arise. Don't act upon them. Those things may arise. Learn to change them from unwholesome to wholesome, remembering to look. Change, the unification, samadhi, rinsing and repeating afterwards. And it's as simple as that. Don't worry, be happy. And you could break up don't worry, be happy into a myriad of things called the Pali Canon. Really, it's all don't worry, be happy. Yeah. Well, my friend, I think that's all for today. Thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, thanks for hosting. All
Yeah,
right.
you're
Appreciate
awesome, dude.
it. You too. All
Love.
right. Peace.
See you on what is it? Saturday, Friday, something
Definitely.
like
Yeah.
that.
All right.
Bro.
Good.
Peace out, homie.
Yep, peace.